This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Exactly 7:06 in the evening, and the 18th Shangri-La Dialogue just concluded. It is a yearly forum where defense ministers and military chiefs of 28 Asia-Pacific states gather in Singapore for a set of talks about defense and security in the region. Now, that does include ASEAN countries, but also folks like the US, China and the UK.
Now, the highlight of this year is that China sent its defense minister to the summit after a gap of 8 years. And we are also working with this summit in the background of heightening US-China relationship.
Yeah, so everybody was watching very closely to see what the members of the US and the China delegation would say. Mm-hmm. And basically, I think it was mostly civil. Mostly. Perhaps it's better to say it was very barbed, but very civil. So the language was polite, but the sentiments being expressed were very much, look out world, it's still happening.
Yeah, the barbs were very much expected. And I guess the other thing that was also predicted for the summit was just this general nervousness among its Southeast Asian partners who are trying to figure out how to deal with this. For these two nations are generally the biggest trading partners for all of these countries. And, you know, we still seem to lack a united front to kind of attempt to deal with the trade war.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, here in ASEAN, but also we saw things coming out from the Australian representatives there also that you can tell people are struggling to figure out where they're going to fit in mm-hmm. in this new scheme. So, for example, people, countries like Australia that have traditionally been allied to the United States, perhaps a little more strongly, some people mentioned that they did not use the words US-led. A US-led approach, and what that might mean, whether or not it was an oversight by somebody new to the process.
Yeah,
or
she's only been powerful like less than a week.
Exactly. So there's some speculation, you know, is that a matter of oversight or is that a matter of, you know, a strategic
kind of stepping around an issue?
Precisely. So that's kind of floating in the air, and that is what a lot of news outlets have been reporting. Now we're going to be crossing over to Dr. Oi Sun, who is a senior fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs, to get an on-the-ground look at things. Oi Sun, firstly, thanks for joining us on the show.
Well, thank you very much, indeed.
So you attended the Shangri-La Dialogue over the weekend. Let's start with the objective. What is it? What is the objective of this dialogue, which happens on an annual basis?
Well, the Shangri-La Dialogue is basically a platform for the defense ministers, as well as some of those, for example, scholars, as well as other stakeholders who are concerned with regional strategic matters to gather around on an annual basis. To, in a sense, talk things over in a more or less informal basis. But of course, sometimes it gets very formal, as when the U.S. Defense Secretary, as well as the Chinese Defense Minister, were giving their respective speeches. So basically, it's a platform for all of these stakeholders to talk to each other. Yes.
What did the forum set to address this year?
Sorry, would you repeat that?
What did the forum set to address specifically this year? Of course, we are working with the context that there is the US-China trade war. There is also heightening tensions between the two nations.
Well, I think there are several objectives this year. The nuclearization process in the Korean Peninsula. Of course, the sort of ongoing trade war between the United States and China, as well as just recently what had happened in Sri Lanka, for example, counter-terrorism. I think these are the main themes of this year's forum. But of course, some of these themes have also been addressed in previous years. Yeah.
So we mentioned this earlier. In news reports, there's been a lot of attention given to the speech made by the Chinese Defense Minister, Wei Fenghe. Why is that the case? And what was the significance of his speech?
Well, I think it's more like his presence at the forum, which is quite significant, as you said, after an absence of 8 years of China's defense ministers from the forum. General Wei, of course, was quite resolute in delivering his message about the PLO's resolve to, for example, reunite. The PLA's resolve to reunite Taiwan, for example. The Chinese. The Chinese claim authority on South China Seas. So, in comparison, for example, the U.S. Defense Secretary, for example, he is still settling into his job. So you could see that his delivery of his keynote speech is perhaps slightly less smooth than that of the Chinese Defense Minister. Yeah.
So our own Defense Minister Mat Sabu also attended the dialogue. What were some of the points he raised?
Well, the Mat Sabu's main point was on Myanmar. Actually, he talked about the Rohingya issue being not only a domestic concern of Myanmar, but it's also a regional issue because, if not handled well, it could lead to, for example, the spread of extremism in the area. And of course, the Rohingya boat people are also a regional concern as a whole and not that of Myanmar only. So while we respect ASEAN's the basic principle of ASEAN of non-interference, I think Malaysia is leading the rest of ASEAN in terms of urging Myanmar to engage in various interactions with the Rohingya leaders. Yeah.
And just to go back, I suppose, to the China-US trade war, you alluded to this briefly earlier, but we also heard from the counterpart of the Chinese defense minister, the U.S. Acting Secretary of Defense, Patrick Shanahan. Could you take us through in a bit more depth, I suppose, the content of what was said and how that contrasted to the stance being put forth by China?
Well, traditionally, trade is, of course, not quite an issue during the Shangri-La dialogue. Typically, it's, as I said, strategic matters, namely, for example, confrontation on the South China Seas, denuclearization on the Korean Peninsula, and so on. But of course, this year, trade has also become an issue on the forum. And I think the acting U.S. Defense Secretary, he reiterated some of the U.S. Positions. He alluded, he did not name specifically China, but I think by implication is China, that China engage in, for example, theft of intellectual property, forced transfer of technology, and so on. Those are standard lines by the current Trump administration as to the accusation that China engaged in unfair trade practices. China, of course, answered back quite resolutely in a speech by its defense minister that, for example, how China want to deal with intellectual property on Chinese soil is totally the domestic concern of China and doesn't concern foreigners, for example. I mean, these are very tough response because, you do have obligations under various international treaties as well as bilateral arrangements. Yeah.
The general sentiment is that there's a lot at stake for smaller countries, including Malaysia, in light of what's going on between China and the US. What's your observation of how these attending countries responded over the weekend, and what are their takeaways?
Well, I think the general attitude of these, shall we say, smaller nations can best be summed up by Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong of Singapore, who gave the so-called opening dinner speech at the beginning of the Shangri-La dialogue. Namely, he felt that, number one, there's a lack of trust between the United States and China. And then number two, for example, Southeast Asian countries, we don't like to take side. We don't like to be put in a situation whereby we have to choose either between China or the United States as to, you know, for example, our economic well-being, our security well-being, and so on. And number three, I think he felt that countries such as those in Southeast Asia could provide platforms for conversations, well, precisely such as the Shangri-La Dialogue. Yeah.
Overall, then, if you could sum it up for us, what do you think was achieved at the dialogue this year, and what are the practical implications going to look like?
Well, I think in general, despite the rather harsh rhetoric from both the U.S. and China side, as embodied in their respective keynote speeches by their defense minister and secretary, I think the general sort of atmosphere, as I sort of sensed it during the Shangri-La dialogue, is actually rather a cordial one. For example, from the China side, they are rather self-confident this year, but not in a very cocky way. Because I think, for example, when the U.S. Started to sort of accuse them of various infringements, the Chinese would answer back in a very measured manner. This is in stark contrast, for example, in the year 2015, at the height of the South China Sea dispute, when both the U.S. and China, you could really sense like there's this antagonism between them. So, well, as with any other Shangri-La dialogue, it's a platform for them, number one, to lay out their respective positions in a public manner. And number two, in fact, they also engage in a lot of so-called bilateral discussions, namely, for example, the United States and China. We, of course, don't know what exactly transpired during those discussions, but it, again, as I said, provides an informal setting for them to do so here.
Yisan, thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you very much.
That was Dr. Oh Yisan, Senior Fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs, giving us, I suppose, some highlights from the 18th Shangri-La Dialogue that occurred over the weekend. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.